Welcome to Destination Unlocked with me, Daniel Edward.
Just about ready to depart.
Please make sure your seatbelt is not fastened and do make yourself comfortable.
Destination Unlocked is the chatty travel podcast where a local expert helps you unlock their corner of the world. Today we're unlocking Reykjavik, the gateway to Iceland's waterfalls, geothermal pools, and all that gloriously unpredictable fire and ice drama. My guest is Vala Heide Sivason, founder of Your Friend in Reykjavik, and he's packed this episode with practical tips, from how to explore Reykjavik to driving the Golden Circle, seeing the Northern Lights, and the truth about Iceland's famous food, including those hot dogs with everything. If you're planning an Iceland trip, or you've always dreamed of it, stay with us. This is really useful. So, Vala, where are you unlocking for us today?
I'm unlocking Reykjavik, Iceland, or Iceland in general.
Yeah, it's such an amazing place. It excites people. If you're first time ever going to Iceland, chances are Reykjavik's on your itinerary. What are the main things to see and do there? Let's get the main things out of the way, and then we'll go into some sort of insider secrets.
Well, the main landmarks are, of course, Hallgrímskirkja Church. That's kind of like our Empire Plaza. And then we have Harpa Concert Hall, which is another beautiful, beautiful building. We have, of course, in the downtown area, also the Reykjavik Harbor. It's very picturesque to watch over the harbor and over to Mount Esja, which is like the guardian of Reykjavik. And if you venture a little further, Reykjavik is the only capital city in the world that has a salmon river running through it and a beautiful nature pearl called Elliðaárdalur. And it's a wonderful to go into nature in the middle of a capital city, for example. We have places like Laugardalur, a botanical garden, and our beautiful geothermal pool there that I love to frequent. That's one thing that you should not miss when you're in Iceland. You should definitely go and soak in the geothermal water as well as when it's a bit chilly outside.
That was actually my first introduction to Iceland. I went to Blue Lagoon, which is the number one tourist attraction in the whole country. But coming out of that, which was incredible, my goodness, it was nice. But coming out of that, I realized how many geothermal spas and lagoons and just naturally heated pools there are around. There's one in Reykjavik, which is right at the end of the airport runway.
We love our geothermal water, and it's a wonderful way of relaxing after a good day. We love to use per capita in Iceland. Per capita being so few, it's very easy for us to have the record number of, for example, swimming pools per capita. I have some friends that meet in the pool hot tub and just discuss what's happening. And I know that the older generation, they like to have a specific meeting times for discussing the world politics and the local politics. And it can be in the cold, it can be in the summer. We just love our geothermal pools. And now the trend is, of course, opening up all this spas everywhere. We have one in Akureyri just opened up last year called Forest Lagoon, and it's just something that you should plan for. Is definitely a visit, preferably more than one. Blue Lagoon is great, but it's a bit touristy. I love to go to the local swimming pools, go to the place like Laugardalslaug and do like the locals.
Is there an etiquette that people need to know for those local type pools? The spas are obviously, they're all done up as a full tourist experience. But the local pools, it is people's real day-to-day life. So are there things that people ought to know if they are a tourist visiting?
Yeah, of course. You know, some people have been horrified that we like to shower naked before we go into the pools. We think it's just a part of being hygienic and cleaning up before you go into the local pools. But there are usually stalls, or you can go into the bathroom if you feel uncomfortable. But we like people to clean up before they go into the pool. That's kind of like a key thing.
How about talking to people in the pools? Do you greet people, or is it only if you see a friend that you know that you would say hi?
Well, I think it just varies. It just depends. Some people like to start asking questions, and some people like to just be on their own, just think about their life or whatever, and don't like to be disturbed. Some people are open for a chat. It just depends.
A lot of people turn up in Iceland for the first time on a cruise. That's a big part of the tourist market for Iceland. Certainly Reykjavik gets a lot of overnight stays. Mm-hmm. If somebody who's visited on a cruise ship then says, I want to go to Iceland, I want to stay there and I want to base myself there for a few days, a week, where is the best place to sort of base yourself to get the most out of Reykjavik, but also so much nature?
I prefer to just stay in the city centre. With all due respect, public transport is not great in Reykjavik. To get around to some areas, it takes quite a bit of walking, you know, hour and a half. So I recommend for people to have a base like in the city centre of Reykjavik. There are plenty of good hotels in the city centre. But then I would also recommend, if you have a week, stay for a couple of days in the south, because, for example, one of the most wonderful places to visit is the great Glacier Lagoon, Jökulsárlón, or the Diamond Beach. And it takes 5 hours to drive just one way and then 5 hours back to Reykjavik. So I would recommend to stay at least one, maybe two nights in the south, so you don't have to, well, spend the day driving. Do the south coast all the way to Vík, possibly on day one, then stop around there. Then on day two, go all the way to the Diamond Beach, Jökulsárlón, and then possibly drive back to Reykjavik or spend another day on the way back.
And is it the best idea to just rent a car, or are there bus networks that, even though they might not be the fastest, are also reliable enough that you can say, okay, on a Tuesday, I'm going to take the bus down and on a Friday, I'm going to come back?
If you're not doing day tours out of Reykjavik or multi-day tours out of Reykjavik, then I would definitely recommend self-driving so you can control your own rhythm a bit. You know, I love this waterfall. I want to stay longer here. Like I said, the bus system is okay, but I would rather self-drive and be able to stay longer, stay shorter. It also depends, you know, is it in the winter? Is it in the summer? Okay, in the summer, it's easier. But in the winter, you have to be accustomed to, you know, icy roads. You have to be accustomed to quite a lot of wind sometimes. So you have to take that into account. What is your actual driving skills? And one side note on that, please don't just park on the side of the road. If you see a beautiful horse, it can be very, very dangerous. So please don't stop on the middle of the road.
There's some definite safety points when it comes to somewhere as remote and extreme as Iceland. I think that's what calls people towards it, right? The land of fire and ice. But also, there's got to be some sort of awareness of, wait, this is a land of fire and ice. And that comes with some safety precautions. What about the volcano?
Yeah, well, volcanoes are active in Iceland, so fair to say. Every 4 or 5 years, it's been a volcanic eruption. And now it's been very frequent there in the southwest corner. Fortunately, it's been in a pretty safe area. There's one town that has evacuated and 3 houses went under a lava flow at one of the eruptions. But in general, we are just very used to it. It's just part of nature here in Iceland. If you're self-driving, you need to look at the weather forecast. You need to be aware of what's happening. There are some cases of people driving on a regular car into the highland roads, which are not accessible for basic city cars. What kind of adventures are you heading for? You need to think.
I had the most amazing excursion onto one of the volcanoes. I can't remember which one, actually. And we went on the ATVs, like the quad bikes. It was incredible.
We call some of these eruptions tourist eruptions because they are located in a nice area where you can maybe drive up on a hill to watch over the eruption from a safe distance. Yeah, some of these eruptions are just beautiful to behold. When this started erupting in 2021, I went there several times to watch these eruptions and just, you know, I was 1 meter from the lava flow and it was beautiful. Sometimes there are some fun pictures of people, you know, going toward volcanic eruption, Icelanders being so crazy. But of course, we try to adhere to, okay, what is happening here? Is there possible gas? Is it possible that, you know, if it's in a valley, the gases from the volcanic eruption can be very dangerous? You can die. And people are sometimes being just going on their sneakers and think it will be easy, but it's actually a 4-hour trek in over a lava field that can be treacherous and things can happen and wind and chill and so forth. So you need to ask the right questions and make sure that you're safe and when going and visiting a live volcanic eruption.
That side of Iceland doesn't sound like it's for beginners.
In some cases it is, and especially if you get just expert help. There are volcano buses now. We're talking about experts here that have done this before. But like I said, if you're self-driving, you just need to be aware of what can and how it, aware of your safety, and not just go blindly towards the lava flow and think everything will be okay.
Whilst we're on the topic of nature, what are your thoughts on doing a Golden Circle tour? Is that something that is a must do?
The Golden Circle tour is the most famous tour out of Reykjavik for a reason. You see so much in a little amount of time. You see the beautiful waterfall, Gullfoss. You see the geyser, the one all geysers are named after. You see the beautiful national park, Þingvellir, and possibly more. This is one of the things we at Your Friend Reykjavik always put like one of the first things that you should do is experience the Golden Circle. You can do it in a short amount of time. You can do it down to 6.5-7 hours, and you can do it in a longer version. We have like food stops along the way and try to induce food and drink into the nature experience. Definitely recommend to do that.
I want to talk about food, given that you've touched on it. But before we do that, tell me a bit more about your friend in Reykjavik.
I started as a private tour guide, started doing like a food tours and city walks and beer tours and stuff like that. And gradually I needed to clone myself and make more friends. So now we have scheduled walking tours, varied like from Reykjavik folklore walking tour to sweet tooth, introducing licorice and ice cream and different Icelandic unique flavors. And then we have a storyteller event in the evenings where you can go and meet up with a storyteller for an hour and a half and just listening to Icelandic stories. And so then we do private driving tours, multi-day tours, transfers, you name it, we do it. It's genuinely a passion project in regards of just like introducing Iceland to the world in the best way possible. We have over 5,000 five-star reviews, so we are doing something right, and long may it continue.
What's the top tour that you do?
Yeah, it's definitely a Reykjavik Food Lovers Tour. It's like a wonderful way of getting introduced to Iceland one bite at a time. You're going to various restaurants and you're learning about how we survived on this rock for this millennia. And yeah, it's a wonderful tour. So it takes about 3 hours. After a day, you can do a food tour from 5 p.m. to 8 p.m. or something. Everybody needs to eat, and why not do it in a perfect company with a local storyteller?
I think that just sounds so good. Traveling through the plate is one of my favorite ways to travel. I've got to ask you this. It's from Hillary, who wrote in on Facebook about your hot dog obsession, and what's on with this one with everything?
Bayern's best pilsur, yes. Yeah, long before hamburgers and pizzas arrived in Iceland, this was the first fast food establishment in Iceland. Yeah, I remember fondly when I was traveling. So I was born and raised on this small island off the south coast called the Westman Islands. And when we traveled to the big city of Reykjavik, then that was kind of like a must thing to do, to get one of the hot dogs from Bayern's Bestu Pilsur. So it's a family-run establishment. It started with a small hot dog stand in the downtown area, 1937, if I remember correctly. So you go to the hot dog stand and get one or two with everything. And everything is fried onion, raw onion, sweet mustard called Pilsner snip or hot dogs mustard, ketchup that's actually made of apples, and remoulade, which is like a mayo based with a little bit of radish and stuff. It's a mixed sauce, but this is ein with öllu, one with everything. Also, the hot dogs are mostly made out of sheep, lamb. They are not the beef hot dogs that maybe people are so familiar with in US and more. And that also gives them a unique flavor. It's always tempting to have one with everything.
I love Icelandic lamb. That is the best lamb. Absolutely delicious.
The reason is that they're free grazing half of the year up in the mountains, eating, you know, mountain lichen and grass. And so they basically spice themselves. They marinate themselves in these spices, and it gives them a unique flavor. And that's kind of like our Sunday dinners, a good leg of lamb with all the trimmings. It's done as a roast. Some people do it like just barbecuing it, but more often in the oven. But of course, if something is Iceland in a bowl, something is like the dish of Icelanders, that's the Icelandic lamb soup, definitely. So that's root vegetables and our delicious lamb, and cook it for as long as possible and until the ingredients gel together. That's our comfort food. That's our winter food.
That's what I had in a pub in downtown Reykjavik, where I also tried whale, which I think is just a tourist thing now, and shark. Oh, what was it called? These little cubes of fermented shark.
Another local delicacy.
I couldn't hack that one.
Yeah, it's a bit of a acquired taste. And you probably just got a mild version. Yeah, these Greenland shark, if you catch a Greenland shark, it is so full of ammonia. So that's why you need to ferment it for a while. So it's basically not poisonous. This is maybe a little bit of a dying breed, to be honest. You know, it's more the older generation. And we have a food festival in February called Thorraplot, where we meet up and eat the old traditional foods and drink a little bit and have a merry day. But today, this is not something that's maybe regularly found in a rich of a normal Icelandic family, to be honest. But I enjoy it, but it's more just to have fun with my guests. It's offered on the food tour, of course. It's offered as a traditional thing to try out. And people can do it or not. That's up to them. But it's a part of being an Icelandic Viking.
I'm all for trying things. I think if you don't try it, you never know. It wasn't for me, but I'm still pleased I tried it. Where can people find out more and book your tours?
It's yourfriendinreykjavik.com. We are also on Facebook and Instagram and other social media, but our main page is yourfriendinreykjavik.com. And yeah, we have all these tours and private tours bookable there.
I really do recommend checking out yourfriendinreykjavik.com. They've got daily walking tours around the city, in addition to all of the special themed ones. And all of their tours are capped at 12 people, which is a great size. Enough people to chat with other tourists, pick up some of their tips from what they've done so far, and small enough that you can always hear your guide and ask any questions. By the way, if you're enjoying this conversation with Valor from Your Friend in Reykjavik, there's lots more like this to check out at destinationunlock.com. And if you're so inclined, please consider subscribing so you can easily find the Destination Unlocked podcast whenever you're planning your next trip. All of our episodes feature an expert local guide or top traveller, and we just chat. We just see what we discover. If you are already a subscriber, thank you so much for your support of the show, and why not share it with a friend? Right, how about a little quiz? You can play against Valor. Question number one, Reykjavik's most famous hot dog stand.
It's Bayer's Best New Hot Dog, of course, like we discussed.
Indeed. So one easy point. The Concert Hall of Glass on the Harbour, what's that one called?
A Harbour Concert Hall. And it's won several architectural awards, you know, reflecting the Northern Lights and the sea and so forth. It's a beautiful building to visit.
Iceland hosted the Summer Olympics, never, but a single event reshaped Reykjavik's seafront in 1992. What was that event?
Single event in 1992 changed the...
This one's harder.
This is a tricky one. 1992.
Yeah. Okay, I gave you a clue in the question.
It changed the seafront.
Mm-hmm.
Sporting event. We have, of course, Reykjavik Marathon there. That's by the seafront. If you're so inclined to have joined that, usually in the middle of August. But I'm just baffled by this question.
It's a bit of an unfair question. The answer is the Barcelona Olympics. Apparently, the Barcelona Olympics, because they ended up totally reshaping the waterfront in Barcelona with these sort of artificial beaches and stuff. Apparently, that inspired Reykjavik's modern beach culture. The only reason I snuck that question in is to say that next week's episode is going to be about Barcelona.
I love that city.
Question four, the famous Women's Day Off first happened in which year?
1975, if I remember correctly.
You do remember correctly, yeah.
There's a great movie that you should look up. It's a documentary. It's called The Day Iceland Stood Still. You can watch it if you fly with Icelandair, and I think it's available in some channels. It's about that period when people were shocked that almost all women in Iceland just had a strike, and they They basically stopped working, they stopped babysitting, they stopped making food. It was just a wonderful, wonderful way to show how important women are in the society. It's just a lovely documentary, and I really recommend it. The Day Iceland Stood Still. It's an annual event, and it starts at a different time based on how much the wage gap is. It's a wonderful way of just reminding Icelandic society, and hopefully to be a beacon to others in regards to the gender wage gap should not exist and how we can maybe make that better.
That's a fascinating day. I'm going to watch that movie. Thank you. Final question in our quiz. This is just a true or false question. Most Icelanders regularly eat whale meat.
That's a false question. As we discussed earlier, whale meat is not as consumed as it once was. We have a saying in Iceland, if you're extremely lucky or something great happens to you, you win the lottery, it's called a kvalreki. A kvalreki. Could you guess what that means?
A kvalreki. Luck of the whale?
Well, close to it. It's a beached whale. The farm that the whale was beached on, that was a great sign of luck. It was like meat to survive the winter and even more. So it was a great thing to happen. We started whaling in the late 18th century and have been doing that on and off since then, but we don't consume a lot of whale meat at all.
Apparently it's about 2% currently, so it's really low.
A minke whale steak is a very good steak. It's like a cross between lean beef and tuna, but mostly if it's caught, it's shipped to countries like Japan, for example, and more.
If somebody's planning their first trip out to Iceland and they don't speak Icelandic, how are they going to do? Is English pretty widely spoken?
Yeah, everybody speaks English. When you're growing up, you're watching cartoons in English, with Icelandic subtitles or something like that. Everybody is fluent in English, and usually, you know, two or three languages. That's one of the things that Icelanders can be proud of. You know, we are studying Danish because of our Scandinavian brothers, and then we learn French or Spanish sometimes in high school and so forth, German. You don't have any problem communicating with Icelanders. You have the basics of English.
I found it the easiest country to communicate with people. And not just in Reykjavik, all over the country I've been able to chat with people very easily. If you do want to use a few local words, how would you say hello in Icelandic?
Very easy. Hello. Or góðan daginn. Góðan daginn. Yeah. Good day. Let's go on dying.
Go on dying doesn't sound very very friendly, but
yeah, go on dying.
How about please?
Yeah, please. Well, that's something that Icelanders have a hard time learning. Please.
Okay.
But vinsamlegast. Vinsamlegast.
Vinsamlegast.
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah, please is not a, you know, that's the old Viking culture or whatever you want to call it. there's not a lot of please.
There's no need for please.
As you know, the origins of Iceland is like the Norse Vikings on the way to Iceland. They dropped on the British Isles, asked the women there politely to go on a cruise with them to the north, and they just happily obliged. And that was the birth of the Icelandic population.
That's one way of telling it.
Mm. Yeah. You know, truth by the victor. Yeah. Thank you is takk. Takk. Takk fyrir.
And goodbye? How would you say goodbye?
Bless, bless.
Bless, bless. That's nice. I like that one. And importantly, how would you say one hot dog with everything, please?
Ein með öllu takk.
Ein með öllu takk. In Reykjavik, I want to ask you about the city cards. This is for Dave. You've got a great city card that sort of covers a lot of attractions in one.
Yeah. The Reykjavik City Card has a 1-day, 2-day, and 3-day option. And with that, you have access to all the public transport, the bus system, which can work, pretty well in the city center. And then you have access to the most of the swimming pools. You have access to museums, from Reykjavik and more. So, yeah, I think it's well worth it if you're going to explore Reykjavik.
Mm-hmm. Christiane asked about the darkness, and this is something which I'm no good at it in London when it comes to the winter. And in Iceland, for winters, you really have to get used to the darkness. What do people do to thrive through winter?
Well, considering that in the middle of winter, we maybe have like a 4 hours of daylight. Darkness is something that you need to be accustomed to and get used to. What do we do? You know, if you think about it, it's incredible how many Icelanders are creating something. Again, per capita, you know, number of musicians that have done great things, Björk and Sigurós and of Monsters and Men and Kallio and more in Sugar Cubes, you name it. And if you consider that we are only just like a size of Coventry, the total population is around 400,000 people, that includes the immigrants, then, it's pretty amazing. We have great writers, you know, the greatest number of Nobel writers per capita, one, Halldór Laxness. and just, you know, a lot of creativity, using the darkness in good ways. But it's not all good. We're also the highest users of Netflix accounts per capita.
Is there also a weird thing when it gets to the summer and your days are so long?
Yeah, that's also something that freaks people out, that the sun doesn't really go down. You are just... So to have like curtains that can darken your room so you can sleep and so forth. And people playing midnight golf, the midnight sun when you're basically out, well, drinking, partying, whatever, and the day never ends. So it can be a little bit disturbing for many people. But again, that helps also if you're exploring Iceland, then you can just... You know, you have the long day to just explore and explore and explore. While in the winter, you maybe have a more limited view of being able to see some things if you want to see it in proper daylight.
Mm.
But then again, we have the Northern Lights also in the winter, which, that's something that people enjoy. And even though, you know, I see it very, very frequently, so it's not as a... Not as novel as for some, but they can be beautiful.
Is there a place that's best for seeing them? Do you need to leave the city?
In most cases, yes, because the activity needs to be stronger if it's to be visible inside the city, because the light is basically, you know, disturbing your vision. So you need to go into a dark area and, of course, be free of clouds. You know, you need to be able to see the Northern Lights on the national weather forecast. There's a forecast for the Northern Lights where the cloud cover is not, so you can be able to see them, and also the strength of the activity. So I really recommend for it to go outside the city, yes. But there's also places like you can go to Grotta Lighthouse, just to the west of Reykjavik, and possibly see it there if it's okay.
And certainly a lot of hotels where I've stayed anyway, they offer a service where they'll phone you. You can ask them to phone you if there's activity. And then you see people running upstairs to the top of the hotel or whatever in their dressing gowns or in their pajamas.
If I would have to choose one place, I love to see the Northern Lights in Þingvellir, the national park. Part of the Golden Circle. It takes 45 minutes to drive over there. It's just a wonderful background to the Northern Lights. You know, have dinner and then drive over there, or get us a scheduled tour with us or our partners and do it. And so just go there around 8:39, and, you know, hopefully the lights will show themselves around 10, 11.
And do you have any tips for getting the best photos with the Northern Lights? Because really, that's what you want to take home with you.
You practically need some kind of a stabilization, like a tripod or something like that, because you have to have long exposure, like a 20, 30 second exposure to the light. So if you're moving around or you're wobbly or whatever, then the picture is blurry. So that's the key thing. Just have a very steady, you'll put it on a stone or something. Just put it so it's completely steady. Put it on long exposure, and then how it's set up, it's a lot depending on the system that you're using.
So actually, it is worth, if you're going to Iceland to try and see the Northern Lights in the winter, it's worth looking up your camera online and asking, how am I going to get the best shots for this? Because the settings change.
Yeah, definitely. And you can go to the There's a Northern Light Museum downtown that helps you set up the camera, for example. But definitely, just get the right settings for your camera to get them at the optimal photo.
Oh, I have only seen them once and I didn't get good pictures, so I should have done that. I borrowed everybody else's pictures afterwards.
The wrap-up roundup quickfire finish is now ready for boarding.
All right, I've got my quickfire round for you to wrap us up. We've got six questions and we start with this one. What is your top thing to see or do?
Thingvellir National Park. It's important for various reasons. It's a beautiful national park where you can see the two tectonic plates drift apart. You can see the chasms, so you can see the activity. But it's also, because I'm a history nerd, so it's also just like so important for us in regards of our Icelandic sagas, you know, our gift to the world. You know, for example, the stories about Thor and Odin and all that all come from these Icelandic sagas. It's so important for us in regards of just like our history. And yeah, it's just a beautiful place. Thingvellir is what I would tell everybody to go and visit.
And what would be a top tourist trap to avoid?
I would say buying bottled water. We have the best water in the world, filtered to the lava and running straight from the glaciers. You just have your own refillable bottle and just fill it up with the best water in the world.
Your favorite time for someone to visit Iceland?
Wow, that's a difficult question. I would say late August in the summertime, if you want to see Iceland green. And then I would say around the equinox in September to see Iceland slowly going well into darkness, so you can see the northern lights. And the lights can be very strong around the equinoxes, late September and late March. And then I would say December for just like seeing Reykjavik and Iceland snow covered like now. There's been a record snowfall and it just looks beautiful. Just to see the Christmas lights and explore our Christmas traditions. I have a traditional Icelandic Christmas live stream that will be on the 13th of December, where I'm simply walking with a camera and a gimbal and just talking about Icelandic Christmas traditions. And this is live streamed on Facebook. And I've been doing this now for 6 years, since 2020, when everybody was in quarantine. And I know a lot of people just, this is now a part of their Christmas traditions to have a walk with me in downtown Reykjavik, just from their living room.
I love it. So 13th of December, the 6th year of your traditional Christmas live stream. I'll take it. If somebody wants to get excited about a trip to Iceland and they want to read a book about it that's going to get them feeling in the mood, what book would you recommend that they turn to?
So there's a famous book called Independent People by Halldór Laxness, which tells you a lot about, well, how Icelanders survived and different elements of Icelandic psyche. It's a wonderful book. But does it get you excited about Iceland? I'm not sure about that, because it can be pretty dark in places. But I have a hard time naming something that's really bright and cheerful. Everything is a little bit dark.
Oh, well, that works for some. What would you say is the top food or drink to try?
Iceland in a bowl is the Icelandic lamb soup. This is something that just is delicious and something that people should not miss. Icelandic lamb soup, or just Icelandic lamb. That should be something that people should put on the list. Then I would say Icelandic licorice. I love licorice. You know, chocolate and licorice to come together like a draumur, a dream chocolate. That I think that should not be missed. What to drink? We have wonderful craft beers. Try some of the proper craft beers by Reykjavik Brewing or something that's unique.
My final question for you. What is your top authentic souvenir to take home? Not a mass-produced magnet or a cap that you can get from anywhere, but something which is really and truly Icelandic.
A hand-knitted lopapeysa sweater. You know, the Icelandic wool is quite unique. They have like an inner layer, an outer layer. And it's just like a symbol of Icelandic warmth and craftsmanship and something that's made in Iceland by an Icelandic, you know, it's not imported from China, you know, something that's actually made in hand from tradition. And I think that would be the best souvenir in the world.
And they are super warm.
There's a really nice store called the Hand Knitting Association of Iceland. That's in downtown Reykjavik, where you can get it straight from the woman's hand.
But not on the woman's day off. Valur, from your friend in Reykjavik, thank you so much for unlocking Iceland for us.
No problem. Thank you for having me.
That's all for this episode of Destination Unlocked. A huge thank you to Valur from your friend in Reykjavik for unlocking Iceland with us. From Reykjavik's landmarks and geothermal pools to volcano safety, Northern Lights tips, and of course, Iceland's legendary hot dogs. If this episode has inspired you to plan a trip, do check out his tours. They are such a smart way to explore the city with a real local. And if you enjoyed today's chat, hit follow or subscribe so you can easily find your way back for our next journey. For more guides, interviews, and extra travel content, visit destinationunlocked.com. I'm Daniel Edward. Thanks for listening, and I'll catch you next time.